Welcome to Shh, We're Reading Dirty Books. I'm Kalina.
And I'm Saylet.
And this is a podcast for people who love paranormal romance novels. Mm-hmm. Welcome back.
Welcome.
So, we've had a busy day, guys. This was a very busy day. This is our annual golf tournament for my nonprofit that I work for. It's our big fundraiser. And every year, Saylet comes out to help us. Mm-hmm. And we start at like 4 in the morning.
Oh my God.
On a golf course at the opposite side of the world. It's like the furthest out.
It really is.
That you can be and still be like in the Denver metro area. Mm-hmm. And yep, you gotta get up early and help those golfers get on the course and raise money for my nonprofit. But it's fun. It's just a lot of work. And now we're recording a podcast late at the evening.
We did really good though. This was a good year for the benefit.
Yeah. We raised a lot of money. Everything mm-hmm. went really smooth.
Yeah.
It was a good one. It's still, but also it's like 98 degrees in Denver today, or like 100. Who fucking knows? It was just a real hot.
It was over 100. Your car said it was 102 at one point. And it did. Stupid. It's what it is. It's fucking dumb.
So, yes. If we sound a little tired, that might explain it.
It may. We just have our sexy voice on. That's all.
Sexy voice. Sleepy voice.
Sexy, sleepy voice for this very sexy book.
Do we have any other fun things to recap or talk about?
I do want to say, so at the beginning of this, so we have our intro, our mm-hmm. music intro from Jim Townsend.
Yes.
Thank you, sir. Where he says, don't let your mama in the room, don't let your sister in the room. Well, I'll tell you what. I listened to the last part of this book that we are going to talk about in the car with my mama in the car. And she's like, what, who's talking? And I was like, it's just a person reading a book. And she's like, why are they reading it to you? And so she was asking all these questions. And then she started asking questions about the book.
Uh-huh.
She's like, what does undead mean? And she's asking all this in Cambodian. So I have to translate it into Cambodian. I don't know how to fucking say vampire. How do you say vampire in Cambodian? One of my Cambodian friends, tell me how you say that. And so, but she just got really into it, and she's just like, you can ask anybody to read you a book? And I said, well, you have to, like, it's like buying a book, but, you know, if you don't have time to sit and read a book, you could listen to a book while you're driving. She's like, oh, and she seemed really interested, and she was talking the whole way to the store.
Uh-huh.
And then on the way home, she was quiet and listened to the book with me.
You might want to, like, give her some books to read.
I know.
Or listen to.
I think I might. I think that was pretty cool. And I was like, I don't know, is anything raunchy going to happen while she's listening? Because I know she'll ask me about that. What does that mean? So that would have been awkward. But I just was like, funny. I gotta share this because that is fucking awesome.
I love that. That's so great. Yeah. I mean, we've got a ton. Also, a good place to get them is, like, if you don't have the downloady phone, like, system, the app system.
Mm-hmm.
Downloady phone is a good, smart way of saying what I mean. My mom picks up a bunch at used bookstores. They'll have the books on tape or on CDs.
Oh, right.
Or you can go to the library and get them there. You can either actually rent the tape ones, or you can download certain ones if you're a member of the library.
You
could get her a couple of, maybe not paranormal romance ones.
Yeah, maybe not.
But hey, if she is into it, why not? But if that's interesting,
It was really cool. I was like, oh, I thought this was going to be an awkward moment. But she asked questions and she was super interested, and it was cool. It was a good moment.
Yeah. I think it would be a neat way for her to, hear
mm-hmm.
books.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Yeah. Well, my mom and brother are on a road trip right now, and I finally convinced her to use my Audible account and listen to some of the, like, 300 fucking audiobooks that I've paid for over the years. And mm-hmm. I'm like, just pick. Because she, like I said, she always goes to the used bookstore and just gets whatever they have on mm-hmm. CD. And I'm like, you're not picking your books this way. You aren't really choosing what you listen to. You're getting whatever they have used. And that's fine. She listens to fun things. But I'm like, I have good fucking books.
Yes.
I'm like, pick any of them. And so there's this one I just listened to, The Unexpected Inheritance of Detective Chopra.
Hmm.
And it's a detective novel, but from India.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's an elephant in it. And I was just like, you guys would love this book. Listen to this book about a fucking elephant, and just, you'll understand why I keep wanting you to do this.
That's cool.
And so they did. They texted me that they'd finished the book and they thought it was really fun. It was a good book.
So they drove out there.
Yeah, they drove. Mm-hmm.
Cool.
from here to Ohio, so.
That's neat.
So, I finally convinced them to do. So, yeah, we've got both of our parents listening to audiobooks, finally.
That's so cool.
So, that's fun. All right, well, then let's get into this episode's book, which was First Drop of Crimson by Janine Frost, read by Tavia Gilbert.
Tavia. She does say her name in the end. I was like, ooh, we've been saying her name wrong, so.
Sorry, Tavia.
Tavia.
You'd think I'd pay better attention as someone with an unusual name. Like, I'd be like, yeah, how do you say it?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm like, no.
No.
I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, I have the unusual name.
So, okay. So this book is a vampire book, and it is basically the story of Denise and Spade and their romance. Spade is a vampire. He's a couple hundred years old, and Denise is, at the beginning of the book, she is human. She's had a traumatic year, lost her husband to some kind of paranormal attack, and now has started losing cousins and an aunt. Two people really quickly in her life died unexpectedly of heart problems. They were labeled heart attacks.
Right?
But one of them was only like 25. Her cousin was only 25, and so she started questioning it. She's hanging out with her other cousin, and he doesn't think his sister died of a heart attack. He thinks he's being followed. He's not exactly sure. And then that evening, she's with him when he gets attacked and killed. And she freaks out because, again, the cops are ruling it a heart attack. Oh, it's a heart attack. And obviously his family has a history of heart attacks. His mother just died and his sister just died. Mm-hmm. So all these people around her are dying. She witnessed the attack. She knows it wasn't a heart attack. She saw the guy. She tried to mace him. She tried to silver spray him or something. What?
Yeah, it was just like a silver mist.
Something. Because she thought he was a vampire.
Yeah.
Anyway, she gets away. She starts calling all of her paranormal friends, her friends in that community. Because she has, her best friend is half vampire. Well, she can't get a hold of anybody. And finally, she finds Spade. She gets a hold of Spade and she's freaking out. And the guy who she sees kill her cousin shows up, and his name is Rom. Mm-hmm. And he's a demon. And he's told her, I'm going to kill everyone in your family if you don't help me find your ancestor, Nathaniel.
Mm-hmm.
Nathaniel made a deal with the demon, you know, a century ago, and then welched on it and like ran away and has been hiding ever since. And until he comes out, this demon's going to kill everyone in Nathaniel's line. So that means her parents, her siblings, her cousins, her nieces, nephews, everybody. Everybody's in danger until she, and so she's on the hook to help find him.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, the demon also brands her with a mark so that he can find her. He knows where she is, and she slowly starts becoming part demon because this mark kind of affects you and makes you kind of demon-like. All right. So, she's got this, like, that's her trouble now. She's on a quest. She's got to find Nathaniel, and the only thing she can think to do is call Spade and help track down her other vampire friends. Maybe they'll be able to help her. So he shows up, sweeps in, says, I'll help you. And then they fall in love.
Mm-hmm.
And then they find Nathaniel. And then, spoiler alert, they kill the demon. And she turns into a cat. No.
No, really.
No, she does. She does at one point. So there's like a shapeshifter. Like the demon essence makes her a shapeshifter.
Yeah.
So she shapeshifts into a cat at one point. But then at another point, she shapeshifts into like a giant monster.
Yep.
And kills the demon. And then she becomes part, she gets to stay a demon forever. Or like a part demon or part shapeshifter demon forever. We don't know. We're not 100% sure.
There's,
but anyway,
books.
That's the end of the book.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like...
And it's, okay, we have read a Janine Frost, Tavia Gilbert, or listened to this duo before, and the first one was the...
Once Burned. It was Vlad. The Vlad and, what was her name, Talia? I just made that up. Don't listen to me.
Leela?
Yeah, that's it. That was way more like...
I'm surprised I remember Leela. But anyway, and so, if you guys remember, we... I didn't like that book so much. 180 on this fucking book. This book was so good.
So fucking good.
It was
good.
So good. And I know we say that a lot, but we also say that some books
we
aren't
also
so good.
Don't say that sometimes. So,
there are so many good scenes in this book between Spade and Denise. And Tavia did really good. And we had a problem with her accents in the last book.
We just had a problem with Vlad.
It was Vlad.
Because he was so goddamn, like, out of Dracula, practically. I mean, right. He was such a caricature of a person, mm-hmm. and he was, and he had that, and she did that heavy Romanian accent for him, which was awful.
Yeah,
So it was, I really still don't blame Tavia for
sure,
that.
Sure, sure.
I blame choices made by other people.
Well, she did really good on this.
She
this
had
one.
To, I mean, her accents had to be all over the world in this one. We had, like, so Denise is Southern, Spade is British, we had Australian, we had French, we had, like,
three different types of British.
Three different British. We had, like, a Cockney, upper class Brit,
I
mean, it was, she, and they were all having conversations together, and she would flip between them instantly.
It was great.
Amazing. I was very impressed. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this really turned it around for us on Janine Frost's books
really
in particular.
We decided to get back into one of her books and give her another try.
I did not like, I almost think Vlad and Spade are like almost opposites.
Complete.
Because, and they're written by the same person, and I feel like they inhabit the same role, but one is written like crazy, he's a nut job, and the other one is like suave and smooth and romantic and chill.
Yes.
He doesn't get all like angsty over shit. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He doesn't just walk up to her and go, "We're gonna have sex, but I'll never love you."
Yeah, pretty much.
Which is what Vlad did, and I was like, "You're an asshole. Go to hell."
This book was romantic. I mean, I know we're here to talk about sex in books and.
But the genre is labeled romance.
Right.
And I feel like we very rarely find legitimate romance.
Actual romance.
These are like, either they see each other and are so fast and instantly attracted that they skip all romance and jump straight to boning.
Yes, yes.
Or they, like, fight each other for the whole book and then finally fall in love.
Mm-hmm.
But this is like two people meeting, feelings start to happen.
Yeah.
They kind of fight. They keep trying to put each other at arm's distance, but they don't fight completely.
Right.
And it grows into a real slow burning romance that just fucking rules.
I think it's so beautiful. If there were like funny parts in this book and Spade was a romantic character, and we haven't had a romantic character yet.
No.
And while they both had their reservations about it, because Denise had just lost her husband in Spade.
Yeah, she was like a year past his death, which isn't all that long.
Yeah.
Until she was concerned about that. And also she'd lost him in a paranormal event. She and he had decided to go spend New Year's with their vampire friends. And there was an attack by, they kept saying zombies, but I don't get the idea of what they were describing was zombies. So we're not sure what this world entails when they mean zombies.
Yeah.
But some kind of creature attacked and killed, like, a ton of vampires and her husband.
Yep.
And a bunch of things.
And Spade was there.
Spade was there. Her friends were there.
Mm-hmm.
She tried to leave, like, forget all about vampires and the paranormal afterwards.
Yeah, she tried to leave that
so
behind.
She's just like, that is a world of blood and death, and I can't. I don't want that in my life anymore, so I'm going to move on and, like, live privately. She, like, cut ties with him. She wouldn't answer her best friend Kat's phone calls anymore.
Mm-hmm.
She just, wanted to cut ties with it. But then all of a sudden, everyone around her starts dying.
Yeah.
And she's thrown right back into it. And she's like, I'm just going to find this. I'm going to get this demon off of our backs. And then I'm going back to my life of not being involved with vampires anymore.
Yep.
I just can't because there's too much death.
Mm-hmm.
So she's hung up about him being a vampire.
Yeah, she's battling that. She's battling the fact that she doesn't really, I mean, it hurts. She just lost her husband. She doesn't feel right about falling in love again so soon. And he has that, I mean, for him, it's a couple hundred years, but he had been in love with Griselda.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, whatever.
Some form of that word.
She was a human who got, like, she died horribly.
Oh.
Fucking horribly.
Be prepared. That one's not great.
Yeah,
guys.
That one's not a really good way. But, and so he's a little reserved about that, but they obviously can't deny the spark and the feelings and the flirting and the everything going on between them.
Yeah, in, like, memories or flashbacks or whatever, both of them acknowledge that even the very first time they ever met, which was on the night of the New Year that she lost her husband, like, when he walked into the party, the first thing he saw was her, and he was instantly attracted to her, and she stopped talking and was staring at him.
Yeah.
Like, even though at that time she's married, it wasn't like she was even thinking anything, but there was that instant chemistry even then.
Right.
And then they both, you know, went their separate ways, tried to deal with things, but they're thrown back together to, you know, he wants to help her. his biggest reason for wanting to help her, like, he won't admit it. He wants to help her because he really likes her. But he's also somehow trying to protect his friends. Like, because if he doesn't help her, she's going to go ask Crispin and Kat.
Yeah.
That's her threat. And he's like, no, I'll do it instead of Crispin and Kat.
Because he is...
I don't know. It seemed like a lame threat, but whatever.
Is he older than his friends, Ian and Crispin? Do you know? Like, is he more powerful?
Well, no, because Ian was the first.
That's right. Ian was the
first. He turned Crispin and asked whatever his name is, Margarita.
Marschino,
that's it. No, it's not really that. It's not. Sorry, Marschino. We just can't remember this dude's name. He's in it very little. There's a lot of characters that are in this book.
Oh my god, so many characters.
We also have a theory, which we did zero research to find out if our theory is accurate.
Right.
But this is a theory we're going to say anyway. Which is, we think this book inhabits the same world that Once Burned inhabits with Vlad, because they offhandly mention Vlad at one point. So I think that this is the same vampire world.
Yeah.
There's just different characters. So I think also at some point maybe these characters popped up in a different book of hers, and now she's spun it out into their own series.
Right.
Because this is the first of the Night Huntress series.
Something like that, yeah.
The first book in that series.
But she's got him in almost in the same world as she brought up Vlad and his firepower and stuff.
Yeah, so I'm really feeling like, yeah, this is the same world. She didn't want to rebuild a new world.
Mm-hmm.
She just wanted different characters to do different things. Yeah. So, which is cool, but I feel like we're missing a piece of a story. They keep referencing something that happened that they all had to, like, take part in, and except for, not Denise, everyone but Denise. And so, I don't know.
We'll have to figure out this.
So we'll either, we're accurate with our story, our theory, or we're full of shit. Those are your two options. Whatever. Take it or leave it.
Whatever you want to believe. It makes sense, though.
So yeah. So we love this book.
And it was, so Spade was so, he was genuine, and he had prepared, like, he gave pretty much Denise anything that she needed. And he's rich, of course. They always come from money.
Well, you know, vampires live forever, so naturally so they're going to be wealthy, because you definitely don't get poorer the more
really
you go.
They're really good fiscally.
They're just great at investments.
I need a vampire. Anyway, so.
I mean, he was the landed aristocracy in England, so obviously he's fucking rich.
But anyway, so his romance was genuine, and it wasn't aggressive, it wasn't jealous, there was none of that I will fuck you type of talk, or you and I are going to get together, or anything like that. He never really, I mean, there might have been like once or twice where he was just like, you know, said something about something.
Not really until after they did it that one time, like where they were kind of joking back and forth, and that was right before they had sex.
Before, like during the party?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that was, like, the closest it came, because in the previous, like, as it's building, he's denying it for a while, and then he kind of realizes he can't, because, like, even his friends are like, you're behaving very strangely towards this human.
Yep.
You're really doing things that I just am not sure. We do not understand why you're doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, he had his whole clan grouping? Vampire groups? No, like the meeting he did with her where she was supposed to pretend to just be property. I put that in quotes because that's a weird thing that happened to forget happened.
We could just call it his posse. This
what
is
are
posse.
They called, though? No, they have a name. So he's
there's a name for it?
Yes, they use...
Vampire
because he's a master, right?
Coven?
I know those are witches.
I'm making up words now.
Whatever. Anyway, vampire. He called all of his...
It's a flock of vampires.
Flocks. He crawled his flock together. There's a fucking word that's gonna kill me. Anyway, he called his flock because she's trying to see if she can recognize Nathaniel. Because it's obvious that he's hanging out, like, in the supernatural world. Because he wouldn't have been able to hide for a century from a demon if he was just hanging around with humans. So they know... that he's obviously hanging out somewhere, so he's trying to see if maybe he accidentally is, you know, his flock. I need a better word. It's so bad.
Oh, why can't we think of it?
I don't know. I don't know. Anyway, we're moving on.
Yeah.
I don't even know what I... The whole point of what I was trying to get to was to say that he, like, sat her at his, like, right side, which is, like, such a prestigious place of honor that all the other vampires were like, what? Because he doesn't have relationships with humans. Right. He avoids them. He, you know, they're food, sure. We gotta drink a little bit of blood here and there. But he's never put a human in that place of prominence. So everyone around him's like... there's something going on with you. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of trying to deny it for a while, but then he realizes it. and decides to, instead of being aggressive towards Denise, just show her why he's
He was good. Gentleman about it.
He was like, look, I'm just gonna make you like me.
He was courting her.
He was courting
her. He was courting her.
So cute.
It was so cute. And there were times where he would do things deliberately just to put tease his best her foot forward. Just to show her that my intentions are good. We both know this may be a little too soon for maybe you, maybe me, whatever, but I can't help the way I feel.
Yeah.
And he knew she was feeling the same way too.
Yeah.
But a little bit more reserved, obviously, than him. But mm-hmm. he could sense and smell those emotions.
Yes, you know, because of course vampires can smell everything about you, which is super really fun and would not be the grossest thing ever in a relationship. He could, like, sense when her temperature rose.
When she was menstruating. Oh, well, I mean, that one's obvious, but...
That's always upsetting to me. I'm sorry. That's where we gotta draw the line with some of these books. Like, let's not. Really?
Hey, he did mention, though, that he doesn't mind having sex while they're on their period, obviously.
That's true.
He did say that.
I'm He's like, normally this wouldn't be a problem, right. But she has magical drug blood right now.
Oh, yeah, that's right, because she had just been, like... poisoned by this demon branded somehow.
So apparently if you get marked by a demon, it changes your human blood into special blood, and it's like a drug for vampires. Mm-hmm. It gets them real high. They like hallucinate.
Yeah,
it's
a hallucinate.
It's like,
yeah,
well, it's like a combo, because mm-hmm. he started having those hallucinations of his, well, Griselda. Bad things of Griselda's death, mm-hmm. which is not a great thing to hallucinate, but yeah, he discovered her blood's a drug.
Yep.
So he couldn't have sex with her while she was on her period, because then he'd get drunk and drugged.
Well, that, and he was afraid that, because it's so addictive and so intoxicating, that he would bleed her dry.
Yes, he did almost kill her at one point.
Yeah.
By drinking her blood.
Yeah.
Accidentally. He drunk her intentionally, but that's when he found out she had drug blood.
Yeah, he did. Drug blood.
I don't know.
No, that's good.
Wacky.
I like that.
These books are nuts.
Wacky Tibet.
How often do you... Blood. How many times do you think you're going to say this in? Like, so her demon blood was drugged for a vampire. Like, that's just, you know...
It's true. I mean, for us, probably a lot more than normal people, but...
Well, yeah. Because we chose to talk about these books, so obviously. So do we want to talk about our favorite scene?
Yes.
Like, I think that's what we've been building to this whole time without touching on it, but this is literally, like, the best scene.
This is my most favorite scene out of all the 23 books we've read. I've liked a lot of them, but this one was just so brilliantly thought out and written and just, oh, you guys have to listen to it. I don't even remember, like, what part of the book it was in.
It's in the middle.
But, so... They're on their journey to go find Nathaniel. They haven't found Nathaniel yet. And so they're fucking traveling all over the fucking world. Oh. They're on the airplane and they're just going fucking everywhere.
Frequent flyer miles.
I don't know where they are at this point. Like,
Las Vegas.
Oh, that's right.
They're in Vegas because... So this blood is a drug, but this isn't the first time that he's been aware of it. Mm-hmm. It's notorious among vampires. There's this tainted blood that is sold. I forget what its name was, but it's sold among vampires as a drug. Mm-hmm. And so he asks his vampire friend Ian, where would you get some of this? And he says, the last time I knew it was this guy, whose name, who knows, whatever. He doesn't last long, so it doesn't matter. But he... Right. Yeah, it was Tex-Mex. It was definitely... No way.
It was something like that.
BJ?
TJ. BJ.
Blackjack.
Blackjack.
We got there. Look at us.
Yeah.
But that he likes to hang out in Vegas at the Bellagio. And so they went to Vegas to try and find Blackjack and see where he gets the blood from, because if they figure...
Like dragon fire or something
dragon,
like that.
Red dragon.
Yeah.
Red dragon.
I remember
if
something.
If we talk long enough, we'll figure it all out.
That's right.
So, they went to Vegas to find Blackjack to see how he gets his source of red dragon, mm-hmm. which they think is actually Nathaniel, because he's the only other demon-marked human that they know about, so he obviously has to be the source of the drug. So, anyway, so that's why they're in Vegas. Continue on with the story of the best scene ever.
So, you know, they get to their hotel room and he proceeds to tell her, you know, hey, don't freak out, but the shower is in the main room of this hotel room, but don't worry.
It's in the master bedroom.
It's in the master bedroom. Don't worry, I will sleep in the ensuite, or not the ensuite, what is it called? The
side? Guest room.
Guest room that's connected in the...
It's a base, it's a giant suite. He's a millionaire. Yeah. Who doesn't get a giant suite at the Bellagio in fucking Vegas?
So you sleep in the master, and I will sleep in the guest side. And they go through all of their things. They meet Blackjack, he loses money on purpose to this guy, and... They're just trying to juice him for information so that they can find this Nathaniel guy. And, I don't know, you might be better at telling stories than I do.
So, they get, I mean, it's, he, like, basically plays poker all night, and she stands behind him in a fancy dress.
Yeah, they're a couple
His right cute now. Girlfriend, right?
Right.
That's the way high rollers do in Vegas. And so, they finish up, you know, he loses enough for that night. They don't want to spring too many questions on him yet.
Yeah.
They plant the seed, and then they leave. But, obviously, she's exhausted. She's about to fall asleep. He's like, just go to bed. I'm going to stay up and do some work. But I'll probably shower later, so if you hear me, don't freak out.
Yeah, I'll be quiet.
And she's like, no problem. I'll fall right asleep. So she falls asleep, and then all of a sudden she's awoken by something, and she realizes that he's in there getting ready to shower. So she's like, oh, I'm just going to pretend to be asleep. I don't want to, you know, I don't want him to be weird about this. Right. I'm just going to pretend to be asleep and close my eyes and not going to look. So he strips naked and gets in the glass shower, because it is a glass shower. And she, like, kind of peeks her eye open, and she kind of looks, but then she's like, no, it's okay. He's going to turn the shower on, and it'll steam up the glass right away, and I won't be able to see anything, and I'll just not look. I'm okay. I'm going to be fine. So then he proceeds to get in the shower, and the glass does not steam. Also, the light in the shower is on, so we've got highlighted naked man in obviously cold water.
Beautiful naked man.
And she starts looking, and she's just like...
She's, like, peeking through her, you know,
she like turns
on her side.
She's so upset though. She's like, no, this isn't right. I'm invading his privacy. I can't do this. I'm not gonna look.
Her inner monologue is hilarious.
It's
this
so
whole thing.
Cute, but then she's also like, look at that ass.
I know. He's like he's like beautifully chiseled and got his like dark long hair and he's got a beautiful ass.
Meanwhile, as a little bit of backstory, he was very clear in his like inner monologue before this happened that he was very well aware of what suite he got.
Oh yeah.
He did this all intentionally.
Yes.
And he was gonna show her how attracted to him she was.
Oh yeah.
So he didn't tell us exactly what his plan was, but as soon as this happened, we're like, oh, this is his plan.
This totally his plan.
Because he knows that she's attracted, she's just fighting it. So he wants to be like, hey, let me put on a little show. You don't have, like, it's not awkward because he's pretending he doesn't know that she's watching. Right. She's asleep, right?
Right.
So he's not looking at her. He's got his eyes closed and he's shampooing his hair or whatever and he keeps turning around. But she's just like...
He's like lathering his body.
Suds are cascading over his muscles, chest.
Soap and then he like turns to face her but his eyes are closed because he's got soap in his, all over
his
body.
His face.
So she like... She's like, okay, well, I could stare just a little bit because he can't see me. And then he takes his soap bar and just, like, starts to move lower and lower. And then she's like, he starts to get an erection. And she's like, is that a normal thing? Are shower boners a normal thing? And, like, strokes himself very slowly while he's got this erection with his eyes closed still and soap. And I'm like, oh my God, this is the best fucking scene ever.
It's so fucking good.
It was so sexy.
Oh, it was so good.
So sexy.
And then finally she just like throws herself to the other side and like faces the wall. I'm done.
Makes herself not look anymore after she'd like witnessed
already
pretty much
saw the whole thing.
Yes, yes. Oh my God.
And meanwhile, of course, you know, he's like, can hear her heartbeat.
Oh, yeah.
He can tell her temperature's up. He fucking knows she's watching.
He totally knows.
He's like...
And he's giving her an exhibition.
He is. He's being a little exhibitionist and she's being a little voyeuristic.
Oh my God.
But
it
was
best.
Well done. I mean, it was playful, but sensual.
There was no intercourse happening. There was no... You can't even call that foreplay. It was just teasing.
Nope. It was just like, and look, I know you've been seeing me.
Yeah.
Here's what I've got to offer you. Let me show you all the goods that I could provide you with.
Fuck, yes. Dude, that got me so hot.
Oh my God, I was a mess.
Like,
I was in my car when this scene started, and I pulled into my parking lot, and I was like, well, I cannot finish this in the car. And so I immediately, like, came into my condo, and normally, once I done, like, I listen to these at work and in my car. Mm-hmm. Normally, when I'm home, I don't listen to these anymore, because I either am going to watch TV, or I'm talking to my roommates, or I'm making dinner or something. I just don't listen to these books at home very much, because I don't like to just sit here and listen. At that point, I'd rather just read a book, right? Mm-hmm. But no. I was like, I'm going straight to my room, and I'm going to finish listening to this scene, because this is the best scene.
I don't even remember where the fuck I was. I was so into this scene. I obviously wasn't driving, because I think I might have driven into something, because it was just so...
It just came on when I pulled into the parking lot, and I was like... That's lucky. Okay, guys, we gotta finish this one. Hold on.
Oh my god.
No.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, and then the next day they go and do their thing and they go play another game.
It's another, like 3 weeks or something till they actually have sex, till they consummate the relationship. Yeah. Because he doesn't push it. See, again, this could have turned into where he then, like, knew she was awake and came out of the shower and, like, attacked her or something.
Right.
But it didn't. He's just like, there you go. And then he went back into his room. And it was, like, weeks later that he finally was like, okay,
we've built to this. Yeah.
We've danced around this relationship, mm-hmm. and this is gonna happen.
Yeah.
She was also, like, talking about leaving and all kinds of bullshit. And he's like, no, you're not fucking leaving.
Yeah.
You're not leaving me. Happening. I'm not letting it happen.
I'm way too invested right now.
So that's why we say he's romantic, because he slow played this so beautifully, mm-hmm. and it just...
Yeah. And I think the reciprocal part of the relationship, like her reaction to how he was with her, made it easy too, because she wasn't the annoying girl that was either always complaining or was too materialistic or was too badass or too proud. She wasn't really any of that. She was just a normal girl that was trying to figure out.
She was like trying to save her family.
Yeah, she was trying to save her family.
There was one point where the demon gave her a choice of he could increase the power in her brands so it would do her more damage and more harm, mm-hmm. or he could kill, she'd pick any of her family and he'd kill her family, like that person that she picked. And she, of course, picked to hurt herself.
Right.
She's like, I'm not going to pick any of my family for you to kill. She was like, I'll take that bullet. So she's, like, really motivated not just to save her own skin, but to save her family. Mm-hmm. And I think, so she doesn't exactly know what she's doing. She knows about the world a little bit, but not 100%. She can't, like, get into it the way he can. But, yeah, she's doing everything she can, you know, just to save her family. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, she's got a really good heart. And she has all this guilt over her husband, because she stayed and hid in the basement while he, for, it didn't sound like any good reason, went upstairs.
No, I mean, other than that he was a man and just trying to be brave. Because, I mean, I think about that situation, and, like, I actually put myself in that situation. If that was me and if that was Dan, would Dan stay down there with me or would he go up and fight? He would probably go up and fight.
Yeah, and he'd be dead because they were giant zombie monsters.
Exactly, zombie monsters.
That, like, vampires were killed. Like, they lost, I think she said, like, 14 vampires were killed that night. Mm-hmm. And they're much fucking harder to kill than people.
Right.
So the fact that he died isn't surprising. I mean, it's like, a lot of people died that night. But so she has a lot of guilt over that because she's like, I should have gone with him. And I'm like, so you could die too? And she's like,
well, that she had a lot of guilt over that, and she's got a lot of guilt for these feelings that she's growing again for Spade. And it's such a, I mean, it's such a human thing. You can't deny what your heart wants to feel for anything. I believe that you can be in love with more than one person, and hopefully not at the same time. That would suck for everybody involved, but I don't believe that there's just one love for everybody. Mm-hmm. I think there's too many people in the world and too much love in the world that you can't just, you know, I mean, I think you should stay, obviously, with the one person that you're with, unless, you know, you guys are polyamorous or whatever.
That's a,
that's a whole different story, but... Obviously, she was still trying to stay true to her marriage and her relationship and her love, because she loved Randy and Randy was a good guy. Mm-hmm. But it was hard for her to go through those emotions and open up and to accept the fact that she was falling in love again.
Mm-hmm. Well, and no one can say how much time is the right amount of time.
Right.
Because for everybody, it's going to be different. And so, yeah, she's like, 1 year is not enough. And I'm like, well, but you're in love with Spade, so obviously it is enough, you know?
Time
you just
heals.
Never know what's gonna happen, and mm-hmm. so she needed Spade. Definitely. He did a lot for her in this book too. Yeah. Because even at the end, she does this thing where she puts herself in really stupid fucking danger.
Yeah, that was really bad decision on her part.
It was a really interestingly bad choice, if you ask me. But she did it because she was afraid of, like, Spade was going to put himself on the line there. All of her friends were. She didn't want to give Nathaniel back to the demon because the demon was just going to torture and kill him. Yeah. I mean, there was a whole bunch of stuff. You know, but I think she became that strong and that able to make that choice because she'd been spending so much time with Spade. Mm-hmm. And he, like, helped work through some of the past she hadn't. She had just gone and hidden. Yeah. Like, after her husband's death, she ran and hid. Mm-hmm. But he helped her, like, work through it. He's like, well, what would you do today if it happened? And she's like, I wouldn't stay in that basement. I'd go upstairs.
Right.
And he's like, well, then you're not the same person. And that's important. Mm-hmm. You know, like, mm-hmm. you grow and change and you make decisions once, but maybe they're not the decision you make again. And so that means you're different. You are different.
He had conversations with her and walked her through everything and protected her the whole time.
Yep.
And it was, and provided everything, obviously. Mm. He was just such a good guy.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and she was a mess for like 90% of the book. Sure. Because she was like, at one point she threw up on in his coat.
Designer clothes.
She bled over a bunch of stuff. She did kept doing, and so she kept being like, oh, just add it to my
tab. She had a tally, like, going up the
She's like, I owe you a coat. Because, I mean, yeah. She did. She destroyed a lot of shit.
She destroyed it a lot, but it was...
It was funny. Anyway, we love this book.
It was good. And then the actual... So...
Oh! Yeah. We want to do our fun fuck out, because we just kind of already wrapped up the scene, the shower scene, but that shower scene is what we were going to lead into our fun fuck fact.
Yes.
So we're going to talk about kind of voyeurism, exhibitionism, and those are both... things that, like, that can be, like, fetishist almost, you know, uh-huh. like, the act of, like, peeking on people, seeing, like, okay, we're talking about in a strictly consensual, appropriate environment. We're not talking about, like,
anything
illegal. Like, don't go looking at dressing rooms or under doors or through windows at people who don't know that's illegal. That's mm-hmm. illegal. We're not talking about that. We're just talking about, like, ways in which you can use voyeurism or exhibitionism in your relationship mm-hmm. to kind of heighten the sex tension. I don't know. So I got this. There's some information we got from... Sorry, I just got a text and it covered up the title of the article. It's from the website lovepanky.com, and the article is Sexual Voyeurism and the Horny Rush It Gives You. So it's a very long article, all kind of about voyeurism, and it goes into, like, where is it appropriate and where mm-hmm. does it start to cross that line into mm-hmm. inappropriate. But just a quick, simply put, according to the article, simply put, voyeurism is the act of watching someone undressing. Exhibitionism is the act of undressing while being watched. Mm-hmm. So we had that in that scene where Spade knew that he was being watched and he did it intentionally. Mm-hmm. Denise did not know that he knew, so she was towing the line a little bit. But here's the thing.
Yeah.
They're sharing a hotel suite. He intentionally put her in the room with the shower.
It was entrapment. He entrapped her. Totally.
Like, he knew, I mean, but she didn't know it, but if he had been concerned, he obviously would have showered before she went to bed.
Yeah.
So I feel like she can feel okay about this, because, well, also, by the end of the book, he tells her the truth and says, no, I knew you were watching. I did that purposely. I stomped around the room until you woke up.
Because she was tired.
She's like, I'm sorry. I was looking. And he's like, no, I know. I did this. And so, just another little quote from this article. Your voyeuristic side doesn't make you a monster or a bad person as long as you're staring at someone who wants to be watched. So that's the caveat.
Uh-huh.
Like, do this together as a couple. So it has, and then the article gives you 7 ways to get more voyeuristic in your sex life. So these are all, again, within a couple or multiple if you're, again, polyamorous or something. Mm-hmm. So one of the options was use mirrors. Mm-hmm. Use the mirrors so you get that idea of being looked at, but it's really just yourself.
just narcissism.
But that's okay. There's a role playing. So that's where you could, like, pretend to change in another room while being looked at by your partner in a way that you're pretending like you don't know.
Right.
So role playing that someone's peeping through, like, a doorway. going to a strip club together, uh-huh. going online with a webcam and either looking at other couples who are on a webcam or sharing a webcam stream between a couple, mm-hmm. going on vacation to like a nudist resort or sex vacation, videotaping yourself, or watching another couple in bed. And this one, I think it's friends. So if you have friends who would be up for it, then have sex with your
friends. Right, other than it's just porn.
Next to your friends.
Right.
Which, hey, to each their own. I know all my friends, though, and I know that's not...
Oh, God,
we're not
no.
there.
No. I don't think we'll ever go there. Fucking love you guys,
but... 100% know we'll never go there. No. That's just not something I need in my life. But we just wanted to share. So that's our little fun fuck fact about voyeurism and exhibitionism.
Yeah, because that's what she was doing. We did a little bit of that today.
We did. Well, I would like to say we were more leering.
We were leering.
At no point were the guys we were leering at getting naked or doing something that they thought they were doing in private and we were watching them secretly. We were staring at them as they just walked around a room because they were hot.
Yeah, we were just goggling at them. I mean, they were wearing golf uniforms, like...
There are some fine men that golf. I'm just going to say. They get that nice tan, like, roped arms.
Yes.
Like that thin rope, like, muscle rope. With
With the arms.
And they're all tan because they're outside all the time.
Yep.
There was one in particular, which was just...
What is the thing called? Is it a long shot? Long
stride? He was the long driver.
Long driver. Yes, he was.
He was fine.
That man was beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, at one point he came up to the table because he needed to talk to Kalina.
Yeah.
And he said something, and we literally both just stopped and stared at him.
Slack jaw, drool hanging out of our mouths, like, huh?
Well, we're like, we didn't
what
say,
did you say
anything. Like, we just stared at him.
He's trying to give me money so I could take it for the charity, and I'm all like, huh?
No. Huh? And he's like, when we don't say anything, he just smiles. Because he fucking knows it. He fucking knows it. He's like, I just made these girls squishy. And, yeah.
He was gorgeous. God,
he was beautiful. He was a beautiful man.
Then it was, Anyway. Yeah. So, okay. See? Yeah. But that was not voyeurism.
No, it wasn't.
That was just straight up ogling. They were just they were dressed and in public.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't do anything wrong. They were just real hot.
Not in public. In my head, however.
Well, that's
I'm just kidding.
Whatever's in your head is in your head. You can't have that policed.
Nothing actually happened.
No.
It was just a whole bunch of, oh my God, you are very pretty.
Very nice. Very nice. Anyway, we should move along.
Let's do our kiss and tell.
Oh, is it time?
Yeah, let's just do it. So, our kiss and tell is relatable to this book because you've got the whole group of friends.
Yes. That are within it. So we kind of mention it, but... Denise's best friend in the world is Kat. Mm-hmm. Kat is a half vampire, and her husband is a full vampire, Crispin. Mm-hmm. Spade, Crispin, and Ian are, like, best friends. They have been for hundreds of years.
Yeah.
They've turned vampire kind of together. Mm-hmm. They went from England to Australia on one of the convict boats, where they put all the prisoners on the boat and shipped them to Australia. So they became friends on that boat as humans, and then at some point in Australia, we don't have the full background, kind of became vampires.
Right.
So they've known each other for hundreds of years. They're best friends. Crispin married Kat. Kat is Denise's best friend.
Yes.
There we go.
Yes.
Friends.
So our kiss and tell is sleeping with friends of friends. So Crispin always comes at Spade and says, hey, I have to know what's going on if you're going to be... you know, sleeping with my wife's best friend.
Well, he had kind of put Kat under his protection, like, even more than a year ago. Even though she didn't do any of the things that would actually list her as being part of his flock. Again, we don't have the right word. But anyway, because in order to be considered part of a vampire's flock, you have to either be in a sexual relationship with a vampire or... food. You have to be blood. Mm-hmm. You know, they feed on you.
But property. Crispin,
property. Yeah, they used the term property, which was unfortunate.
Yeah.
But it also, like, fell away halfway through the book. It was like, they hit it really hard for, like, half the book.
In the first part.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, no one used the term property again. Right. And I was like, I don't get this book.
Yeah.
But anyway, Crispin had never slept with Kat, or I mean, he did, Kat's his wife. Never slept with Denise or fed from Denise. So she couldn't technically be part of his flock that was thus under his protection.
Right.
But everyone considered her to be.
Yes.
So Slade spending all this time and running around the country with her was a little bit cause for concern, because mm-hmm. Crispin's like, no, I've declared her to be my protectorate. That's not the right word.
Protectorate.
She's under my protection. Mm-hmm. And I want to know what you're doing. And he's like, it's none of your business. She's not your property. And you didn't sleep with her, so I can do what I want.
Right.
Okay. So, that's why we're talking about friends
sleeping
who sleep with
friends of friends. Right.
And I feel personally targeted by this kiss and tell. Because, as my dear friend Saylet knows, that's like my M.O. I'm like, hey, you have any single friends I can sleep with?
Well, yes. You
might actively be doing that at the moment.
You know, it might be a current situation.
Currently, that's what's going on in my life.
Yeah, but you know, we know who's getting who in the divorce, so it's all good.
Well, I do want to say, because I have never told my friend who this would affect the most, but mm-hmm. if she ever chooses to listen to this podcast, she'll hear it now. This wasn't done cavalierly, without thought.
Sure.
Because I did think long and hard, like, you know, we're a pretty close friend group.
Uh-huh.
And that would be a real shame because he is her husband's best friend.
Right.
And she's one of our best friends.
Right.
And we don't want to make things awkward, you know. There is always the chance that we will break up or not sleep together anymore. I don't know which term to use. That's on me. Definitions are not a strong suit of mine. So I made the very cognizant choice and decision that whatever happened, I would not allow this to become awkward for the group. We're just going to work through it. If if it happens and we go our separate ways and move on to other partners, then we're just going to have to learn to all be together and not, and which is unusual for me because all of my exes are out of my life 100%.
Yeah.
I've never kept an ex in my life for any reason whatsoever. Right. So I'm like, well, this is one I'm going to have to just muddle through.
I think that is obviously a great decision, and you put friendship before yourself, which, you know, that's an important thing, especially right now. I mean, you make all these acquaintances in your whole life, but you have that set two or three really
friends. Of us girls have been friends since high school.
Yeah.
So we're pulling 15 years of friendship. Yeah. So I can't jeopardize that.
And you and your friend.
Guy friend. And we're not going to name him.
Yeah. have also, I mean, like, this is, the feeling's mutual. It's agreed upon. And he, I would assume, is
we'd have to actually talk about something for that to be the case.
Yeah. my experience with what had happened before with other one tells me that it would be okay because he has tried to talk to her and she's fuck you.
I know. And that's why I know that
it's okay. Yeah. I feel like it would be an okay thing. I mean, obviously there's always going to be some type of awkwardness,
but we'll move forward.
Yeah.
And that was the other thought that went into my head before. So he had been with a different friend of ours.
Our friend.
Before, and when they split, it got real awkward between them, and so now she's never around him. She doesn't like to be. And I knew that, and I was like, I don't want to put Emily in this position where her friends have all slept with her husband's best friend, and now he's either not welcome anywhere or her friends aren't going to welcome everywhere. So I'd be like, this is too weird.
Yeah.
So I thought all this through. I also thought all this through while very drunk and horny out of Thanksgiving, so on a Black Friday. And I just went, I'm going to fucking do
this shit is happening.
I've decided. I've clear-headed this and I'm going. I can't possibly regret this in any way, shape, or form. We're proceeding ahead. So.
Hey, I think it's cool.
Well, I'm 35. The pool from which you tend to meet people at this age, it shrinks. My office is all women and all women 50 plus.
Right.
So I'm not meeting anybody in my office.
Mm-hmm.
There's literally two men that work for us, and both of them are like 70. That's not happening. So there's that. So you can count work out. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big club or bar person. Mm-hmm. And also, I worry about who you end up taking home from those places. Sure, you don't know that that's a full... So then the next thing is online. Like, really, you're resorting... Like, you kind of are pulled down to... You're either going to meet someone you have to actively date, like, usually through some kind of online app, mm-hmm. Tinder or something... Or you casually fall into a relationship with your friend's friends. Right. That's all that's left to you. Right. I'm like, oh, paired up. Look, we're the two single ones left in the friend group. Turns
out. I know you. You know me. We're not crazy.
We've yet to kill anyone.
That can't be your intentions. Yeah.
So I think it's bound to happen.
Sure.
Like, the more you, like, yeah, the older you get and, yeah. like, the, like, kind of narrower the pool becomes. Well, the... I have to wait to the first round of divorces before I can start. Once our friend group starts divorcing, then everything gets shaken up again.
There's that inevitable chemistry mm-hmm. that leaves the two outsiders pulled together. It's just what it is. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's not like you guys were outsiders. It's just like you said, it was the unpaired, the two single people who were attracted to each other.
Yeah. There was it definitely like something for like at least a year preceding.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
So,
yeah.
Again, it happens.
I like it.
Don't knock it. But I do think it's important to not endanger friendships.
Sure.
So be very cognizant of the things you're doing.
Yeah.
Like, I think it could happen a lot easier, especially like in your 20s, where you just start sleeping with people.
Sure.
And you just don't realize that you're destroying friendships because mm-hmm. now you've created awkward situations for your friends. At 35, I'm like, no, I'm going to make really good decisions. I'm going to really think shit out before I act.
I also think that this is, there's a difference in situations like this between how a woman would act and how a man would act. Because now, so now I get to tell my part, which yeah. is, I don't have
okay.
a theory. but I can sort of speak on you and I to like 7 degrees of separation have almost been with the same people. And I could tell you offline.
Off mic, we're going to do the math.
We are on doing this. The math. Oh, Dan and I have done the math.
Oh, no.
And it's happened. You and I have. I think it's like 5 or 6 or 7 degrees of separation you and I have boned. So.
High school, what have you done to us?
I know, right? But that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Is what how a woman would react to this situation and how a man would react to this situation. And this is just me speaking from me. Don't quote me on anything. I don't know every man in the world. I don't know every woman in the world.
Yeah.
But I think that at least
broad generalizations, yeah.
For us three, there's that respect there where we wouldn't cross that line unless obviously you cognitively thought about this relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like Dan and his friends have been with the same girl, and it's a girl that's in their group, in their crowd, in their posse or whatever, and she's just shared all over the place by all these guys. And it's just not just one girl. I can name a handful of a couple of girls that 2 or 3 of him and his friends have shared. So you see what I mean? So like, I think that there's a difference between
okay.
how a woman would be in a situation like this versus how a man, because obviously him and his boys didn't care.
But do they spend a lot of time with her? Like in friendship relationships?
Yeah, I think they...
Or these, they not just her, but whoever these girls were.
Right. And
women
I don't,
were. These were women.
Right. And I don't even know if I can even call them friends. I would just call those girls as known in their clique.
Yeah. So, but I think that's why, like, the 6 of us...
Yeah.
We're doing a lot of friend things together
yes.
before he and I ever started
right.
sleeping together.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is a little bit different than just people you know and kind of hang out with. Like, because
sure.
if you're going to still see each other as a group. And also, that had to have been a long time ago if it's Dan. So you're talking, like I said, 20s. You're
right.
talking like
exactly.
back in 20 teens and 20s where, again, you behave a lot differently. And
sure.
Yeah, so sleeping with a bunch of guys who are all friends probably doesn't faze you as much as
right.
when you're like 35 and you're like, maybe I don't want to do that.
Right. And okay, so there's an age factor too. So, I don't know.
We'll see.
I guess, obviously it's all situational and stuff. I imagine if the roles were reversed and say you had slept with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Say we were all single.
Okay.
Say all 6 of us were single.
Okay.
And you had slept with this one person in our group,
mm-hmm.
and but you guys are no longer involved.
Mm-hmm.
That one is off limits to me and our friend.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? But for them, it may not be.
Okay, I get that.
So, like, for them, just because that person slept with you doesn't mean the other guy can't sleep with you.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's a role reversal.
Okay,
it's,
I get it's that. I get what you're saying
gender
now.
Thing. It's just...
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, I don't think... Yeah, none of us would really do that.
No, I don't... Well, I'm married.
Yeah,
obviously.
So is our other friend.
Even that aside, I don't think that it would...
No, I'd none of... Yeah.
I just
wouldn't have come up.
No. So, yeah.
All right.
We're going to talk about our degrees of separation.
As soon as the mic's off.
I know.
Yeah. Because I don't know this.
Oh.
I know nothing. So I don't. Like, no one ever tells me shit. So I'm just going to be like, what? What? Who slept with who? And I'll learn all this new stuff about my high school friends.
It's going to be awesome. I might have to call Dan and verify it.
Oh, good.
That my cookie trail is the right one.
Alright.
Okay,
I think it's time to rate this book.
Yes.
Alright. Well, we both loved it, so naturally, we'll probably give it pretty significantly high ratings.
Obviously, I have to pull up our rating thing because we haven't gotten it down yet.
I gave the last book a 10.
You gave it I Found God,
oh,
dude.
I really did love that book, though.
You love you
We've had
some
two
badgers.
Really good... men, like, back to back.
Yeah,
like,
because he
really
was,
good
yeah, he was
men.
A good guy. Yeah.
I don't feel like I'm going to give this one a 10, just because I feel like maybe I lost my mind last
week. You loved that book.
I really did love that book. I'm going to give this one... I'm going to give it a super squishy 8. Or a fuck me 9? Can I give it an 8.5?
You can give it an 8.5.
A squishy fuck.
No,
That's the in-between the
yes.
8 and 9.
That's a good one.
There we go.
Yeah.
8.5. And I think that's on both the book and the Dirty Pleasure rating.
Yes.
So, because we just talked about the shower scene. There's two actual sex scenes that happen. The first sex scene is the most romantic sex scene. And we're not going to tell you about it. You have to go fucking read it or
yep.
listen to it. Because it is perfect. It is perfect.
Go pay homage to... Janine Frost, because that was so brilliant. It was so good.
So good. So yeah. So both squishy and just the book as a whole.
Yeah.
8.5. Sexy fuck.
I think
squishy
my
fuck? Squishy fuck.
Squishy fuck. I think mine ends up being that way because I'm gonna give super squishy to the book as an 8.
Mm-hmm.
And then for the sex, I was gonna give a
fuck me nine.
So I can say it's about the same.
It's about the 8.5.
It averages 8.5. Because, and even, so we talked a lot about just the shower boner scene.
So good.
But their first love scene was, like Kalina said, we're not gonna tell you about it. It was romantic.
Like choirs of angels happened. Singing hallelujah in the background as I listened to this book. I was like, God damn it, this is good.
And it wasn't just boring, romantic, like, lovey sex. There was kink in it.
Yeah.
And it was sexy. And he went down on her a fucking lot. And, like...
Not as aggressive as the library. That one got a little too much.
Well,
where
that
it was
he
like,
was, like, back and forth, like, back and forth.
Right. And I was just like, oh, I don't know where people are. Where are you? Anyway.
But he loved
Again,
it, yeah.
You guys just have to trust us on this if you like books and for some reason aren't reading them along with us, which I really highly recommend you do. And you haven't read it yet, just go read this one. It's worth it. Every bit of it is worth it.
It's great. It
or
great.
Tell us we're wrong, I guess.
Tell us something. Fuck, at this point,
we just want somebody to reach out and talk
like
to us.
Please. Your friend.
Anyway, so next book on the list, we're going to read Kiss of Fury, which is the second Dragonfire novel by Deborah Cook.
Mm-hmm.
We did, if you remember, back to episode 4, I think.
Who knows?
Yeah, it was episode 4.
Okay.
Kiss of Fire was the first of the series.
With Quinn and Sarah.
And so this will be book number 2 in the Dragonfire series. Kiss of Fury, Deborah Cook. And it's a book. Did you hear that?
What?
It's a physical book.
Pages.
I know.
Reading.
Textual with our eyes. Anyway, well, thank you so much for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this episode and you come back for future episodes.
Mm-hmm.
We're reading dirty books, and you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Dirty Books, and that's shh with three H's, or you can email us at shdirtybooks@gmail.com.
And you can also find us on our website at shdirtybooks.com, SoundCloud, iTunes, Google Play,
anywhere you find podcasts.
It's just how we're gonna say it all the time. And we'd like to once again give Jim Towson a shout out for his beautiful music.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. And have a good evening. Day. Bye.
Yeah. Keep reading.
Yeah, you've been listening to Reading Dirty Books with Galena and Saylet. Be sure to tune into the next episode for some more of your dirty books read to you. And if you're listening on a format that allows you to give a rating, please do that for them.